Select Committee on Health Innovation will come to order. Anola, please call the roll.
Chair Tuck. Vice Chair Lopez.
Here.
Ranking Member Casella.
Here.
Alvarez. Representatives Alvarez, excused. Andrade.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Chamberlain.
Here.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Present.
Lopez J.
Here.
Rayner, excused. Rizzo.
Here.
Silvers, excused. Steele.
Here.
Tremont, excused. Williams.
Here.
Ex officio Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Anola. I'd like to please ask everyone to silence your cell phones before we get started. We are going to start with House Bill 739, North Brevard County Hospital District, Brevard County, by Representative Fine. Representative Fine, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members. I'm sorry to be here in the short straw committee here at 9 o'clock on a Friday. I will try to not belabor things. House Bill 739 is a local bill dealing with the North Brevard County Hospital District, which owns and operates Parish Medical Center. And normally I try to open my bills in 15 seconds or less, but I am going to ask for your indulgence as I give you a little bit of information up front. House Bill 739 does two things. Number one, it changes some of the governance structure of the hospital. And second, it requires that the hospital effectively do evaluation and look to see if there are alternatives to being operated as a government hospital. As you may know, there are three types of hospitals in the state of Florida. There are private hospitals, they're for-profit, there are nonprofit hospitals, and then we have government hospitals, which are owned and operated by the government. In the case of Parish Medical Center, just so you understand why we're thinking about doing this, they currently owe $80 million in the name of taxpayers in our county, in addition to having $237 million in liabilities. Over the last year, the parish hospitals lost money almost every year during the past decade, with the two exceptions being when they got the big infusion because of COVID relief money. If it hadn't been for that, it would have been every year. And then hospital days and admissions have dropped 10% annually over the last 10 years, despite the fact that my county is booming. For those of you who care about COVID, during the COVID vaccine, the hospital refused to allow their employees to administer the COVID vaccine to their patients, despite the fact that it is a so-called safety net hospital requiring patients to receive the vaccine in outdoor clinics. They are allegedly a safety net hospital, but they've refused in the past to contract with multiple Medicaid managed care companies, including Aetna and Humana. Not really sure how the safety net works when you don't take all of the Medicaid. And then lastly, just to summarize, CMS, as recently as 2020, gave Parish a one-star grade, ranking them in the bottom 5% of all hospitals in America. Maybe that's the best we can do in our county. I don't know the answer to that. Nothing may change as a result of this bill, but I think it makes sense after all this time to take a look at whether another operator of Parish Medical Center makes sense, and that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Fine. Members, do you have any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Casello.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Fine. My question is that if the hospitals around this area are being successful on their bottom line, why is this one such a failure? Is it mismanagement? Is it just because of the overall administration?
Sure.
Representative Fine, you're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I'm not going to make the statement that anyone else could do a better job. I don't know the answer to that. What I can tell you is this is effectively just the hospital of North Brevard. Some of you live in areas where there's maybe a few hospitals in a fairly dense proximity, and one of them may be private, and one of them may be nonprofit, and one of them may be the government safety net. That is not the case here. This is just my county's 72 miles long. This just happens to be the hospital in North Brevard. There's a hospital in South Brevard as well. It just happens to not be operated by the government. It happens to be operated by a nonprofit. So I'm not going to make the statement that someone else could run it better. I'm not going to do that because I don't know. But what I am going to say is with this level of performance, I think it makes sense to see if there's someone else who's interested in giving it a try. And that's all this bill does.
Members, any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, there are no amendments. We'll move to public testimony. We have George Mkhitaryan. He wishes to appear in person. Mr. Mkhitaryan, from the North Brevard County Hospital District, doing business as the Parish Medical Center. You're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and distinguished members of this committee. I am George Mkhitaryan, President and CEO of the North Brevard County Hospital District, doing business as Parish Medical Center. I stand here before you today, proud to represent the citizens of North Brevard, our district, and our care partners, and to bring you much needed information in order to prevent a travesty from occurring based upon misinformation. I am here to give you the truth about my organization and the truth regarding what is behind this bill with dire consequences if it is to pass. Supply and demand, a factor of business that we've all heard since we were young. Our organization provides much needed healthcare services. The supply, that's what we are, the supply of healthcare services. And we provide those supplies of healthcare services based upon the demand for those services. Much of the services that we are providing are provided to members of our distinct community that can't afford to pay some or all of their healthcare costs. 25% of our community is at or below the poverty level. The demand for services in our community and for these people does not go away simply because you decide to turn off the supply, which is us. All that would do is redirect the demand for those healthcare services elsewhere to hospitals many miles away from our community and fill those for-profit and not-for-profit hospitals' emergency departments with patients from our community. Do you think that is what those hospitals want? Do you think that the people in these communities want that to happen? Here's our philosophy: not to stockpile millions of dollars in some bank account, not to tax citizens in our community. That's right. We don't tax and haven't taxed for 28 years. And we also pride ourselves on being one of the lowest cost hospitals in the entire state, again, to allow people in our community to afford receiving healthcare services. We put every penny we make back into the programs and services to serve our community. In fact, what we as an organization are doing should be celebrated, not attempting to destroy with this bill. For instance, we have been doing what many of you desire us to do. Again, providing services to our community without taxing for over 28 years. Recently, we used $2 million of our own money just during the past 2 years to fund the establishment of a federally qualified health clinic. This clinic is a less expensive alternative to access for health care for the poor and the indigent. This clinic saves this state money by offering an alternative to Medicaid so you don't have to expand Medicaid because it draws down on additional monies and grants from the federal government, something that I know is near and dear to your hearts. Allow me to describe just a few of the programs and services that we provide that would not be provided should our hospital be sold because these services do not generate a profit, but again, are needed in our community based upon demand. We perform the necessary medical clearances for psychiatric patients to be admitted to the local psychiatric hospital. We are the only health system in Florida, in fact, the nation, certified by the Joint Commission to provide what is considered to called certified integrated care, which helps reduce duplication of services and reduce the cost of those services, again, for the community we serve. We have the only hospital-based wound healing center in the county. Our children's center is unique and treats up to 300 children daily. It's a one-stop resource for early childhood development programs combined with medical and rehab services all in one location. We support and house in one of our buildings a school and daycare program for children with autism. We support our homeless veterans with our participation annually in the search and rescue program. We support and fund various dental clinics and programs. And while we are not the only primary stroke certified center in Brevard, the next closest one to us is 48 miles away. Without a certified stroke center, patients are in danger of death or disability. You see, if you ultimately want to close a public hospital like ours, you first need to address the demand for those services. There are ways of doing that. You can initiate incentives for people to use lower cost places for care, such as the federally qualified health center that we paid to establish. You could encourage people to use urgent care centers. You could encourage them not to use emergency departments. But you have to first meet the demand. Otherwise, all you're doing is creating unintended consequences. This is what health policy is: designing, structuring, and implementing complementary systems of care for the maximum benefit. It is not done by arbitrarily eliminating one public hospital that is key to the success of the healthcare system in Brevard in Florida. As a district hospital, we are governed by the state's government and the Sunshine Laws. We're always prepared to answer and address any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Is there any further public comment? Yes, you may. Yes, you may. Representative Steele, you're recognized. I'm sorry, Ranking Member Casello. Sorry, I didn't see you there.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Good morning, sir, and thank
you for
the services that you do. I sit on a board of trustees of a hospital, and for the quality of care to be given, you got to have a bottom line that's functional. I understand that your residents that you serve, 25% of them are in poverty, on the poverty level. So what is the quality of care that you're giving? I know you're giving the best that you possibly can with the monies that you have, but what about the quality of care that you're giving?
So
recognized.
Sorry. Thank you. So as a trustee, you understand that there are many rating agencies in this country. Those rating agencies use different criteria and they use different data in order to do their quality assessments. Recently, people have chosen one such quality indicator to measure our success around quality. There is a private company that uses their own private data source called the LeapFrog Group, which we recently have received a C grade. In fact, we've received a C grade all during the pandemic. Interestingly, for every year prior to that, prior to the pandemic, we received an A. In fact, the president of that organization came to our organization to present us an award for one of the few hospitals in the country with continuous A ratings. We fell off during the pandemic because our attention went elsewhere. By working directly with, supplying dollars, resources, and manpower during the pandemic, putting up freestanding places where people could be vaccinated and be tested. We did that in conjunction with the local health department in properties around our city. That's what we did. We just had a survey by the Joint Commission, who you know well, regarding our stroke program. Guess how many findings they had? Zero. We were just recognized by the American College of Surgeons for being one of the highest quality organizations. We just received accreditation with commendation from the Commission on Cancer. Zero findings. So if you want to pick and choose one rating, you obviously have the right to do that. but that is not indicative or reflective of the care being provided in our organization. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Thank you, Vice Chair. The administration, do you think, in your opinion, okay, that maybe some of the issue might be with the administration, the way things are being done at the hospital, that caused these issues that we've been talking about?
I don't know what...
Recognized?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Not certain of what issues we've been talking about other than the quality.
Well, if I may, Chair?
Yes, you're recognized.
Has there been any case of mismanagement of the hospital? I know you've said the services and everything. Has there been any type of mismanagement that caused your bottom line to disappear?
So, again...
You're recognized.
I'll catch on eventually. Sorry. Bottom line has not disappeared. The bottom line is applied to programs and services each and every year. There have been comments about how much outstanding debt we have. 96-97% of hospitals in this country have debt. That's how they construct and build. That's how they provide the latest technology. They borrow money. We borrow money just like any other hospital. However, the shrewdness and intelligence of our board directed us to go directly to the banks and obtain what are called private placement bonds. Those private placement bonds total about $78 million at a 3% interest rate. The interest that we pay on the bonds amounts to about 3.7% of our annual expenses. That's not a hospital in crisis. That's a hospital that has a manageable debt of 3.7% of its expenses. And just like any of you who borrow money for your homes, we've borrowed money for our building. And it's only 3.7% of our total expenses. If we had to ratchet down for a month or a year to make those payments, we could easily do that. So that's how we manage our money. Would all of you prefer that we had $250 million cash in the bank? As a public hospital, probably not. What you should be proud of is the fact that we are providing the services that our community needs incredibly cost-effectively, and we haven't taxed for 28 years.
Thank you. Follow up? Yes, of course, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Talking about bottom lines and monies in the bank and everything, do you know how much you pay your administrator, the CEO of the hospital, who runs the hospital, what his salary or her salary might be?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I am the CEO, and I make $524,000 a year, which is less than 50% of the median for my position. I have not asked for an increase in the last 14 years.
Chair, what, $524,000
a year.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for coming and doing your presentation. I have a litany of questions, but the wound care, you were talking about just the hospital, because in that area there's a bunch of organizations that do wound care, correct?
You're recognized.
Correct.
Okay. Just want to confirm. How do you know that the hospital or organization that may purchase, it may not happen, would not provide the services that you said they wouldn't provide?
Recognized.
Having talked to many of them over the years, they would have to do at least three things. One, they would have to increase the rates that we charge by 200-300% to fund the overhead for their corporations, whether those corporations are not-for-profit or for-profit, and we have both in Brevard County, that's one thing they'd have to do. The next thing they would have to do is obviously reduce their expenses. As you go through business school, you've got lots of great universities in this town. Any of them will tell you. You start from the bottom, and you start eliminating things that do not generate profit. Many, and I mean dozens, of programs and services that we provide do not make a profit. but they provide a service to help you all keep health care costs low in the state by not putting burden on the Medicaid system, by keeping people out of the hospital. And the third thing they would have to do, by all indicators, is to eliminate at least 100 to 150 positions in our organization. So if you want to talk about quality, that's a direct correlation between quality and outcomes. They would eliminate at least 100 positions, as I've been told by countless CEOs from other organizations. Those are the three things I know.
Representative Steele, do you have any follow-up questions? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Do you know what your readmission rate is?
You're recognized.
Readmission rate, depending upon disease specificity, is right around 8%, which is the benchmark.
Follow-up? Representative Steele, do you have any further follow-up?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The readmission rate in 2022 and 2023 were 13.8%. So is there a different number that equates to that, or different groupings of?
You're recognized.
There are different groupings of that, yes. Depending upon which diseases you want to pick, you can pick 13%, you could pick 2%.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. The overall readmission rate.
You're recognized.
Is 8.2%.
Okay. One more question.
You're recognized.
You were talking about the debt load on the organization, and you said it was 3% of your expenses, but it's 12% of your overall revenue. Does that concern you at all?
You're recognized.
It does not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, everyone.
We have no further public testimony, so Representative Fine, we're under debate. Any members wish to debate? Seeing none, Representative Fine, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, members. You know, one of the things that you learn when you start in this process is every bill, when people oppose it, they'll stand up and they'll say babies will die. It doesn't really matter what the bill is, and I'm sure you've all heard that in one bill or another. And I think, you know, what we heard today is frankly a bit of fear-mongering. The fundamental premise of the opposition is that the hospital will close. That is not true. This bill doesn't require it to be closed. It doesn't ask for it to be closed. And frankly, I'm happy to change the bill to say that it can't close, because I know that no one would close it. It is the hospital for North Brevard County. There was also discussion of supply and demand. This hospital is the supply. That is true. But demand in this area has exploded over the last 10 years. My county is booming, yet admissions are down by 30%. Why? Because the demand is driving 40 miles away to go somewhere else. It isn't because it's not there. We have a hospital in the southern part of the county, very similar economics to this area. Titusville and Palm Bay are very similar. But the hospital there is not owned by the government, and it seems to do just fine. A comment was thrown out about some group called Leapfrog, and I didn't understand any of that. But the statistic I gave you was from CMS, a government statistic that put them in the bottom 5% in the country. I don't know about this, you know, whatever fake. I didn't use that as part of my argument, so sort of a red herring. They claimed that they put every penny they make back into the community. So in 2016, they lost $4.2 million. So I guess they didn't put any money back into the community. In 2017, they lost $2.7 million. So I guess they didn't put any money back into the community. In 2018, they lost $5.7 million. I don't know how much money you could put back into the community then. In 2019, $8.2 million. In 2020, they would have lost $5 million if it wasn't for pandemic relief funds. In 2021, they would have lost $1.5 million. And in 2022, they lost $21 million, which is the last year that I have. 2022, $21 million, which is the last year I have. This is not sustainable. That is the problem. So this thing is going to go out of business eventually, and then there won't be the supply. And maybe this is the best we can do. I don't know. But when this bill became before our delegation, I don't want to throw him under the bus because he's sitting over there, but Representative Altman and I both voted for this because this is what we think we ought to do. We ought to try to save this thing. And I understand the desire to save salaries and administrative positions and things like that, but that's not what we're here to do. We're here to look out for our constituents. We're here to look out for the taxpayers. It makes sense to do this test to see if someone can come in and save this place. I don't know that they can. It may be doomed, but we owe it a shot. And that is all that this bill does. I'd ask for your favorable support.
Representative Fine having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 739 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez. Andrade.
Yes.
Borrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams.
Yes.
Williams.
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello.
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Chair Tuck. 11 yeas, 0 nays. Madam Chair.
Show the bill favorably reported. Congratulations.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good job.
Keep Thank you. Thank you. Before we hear the next bill, I wanted to take a moment to recognize the doctor of the day that is with us, Dr. Tristan Brooks from Pensacola. Doctor, thank you for being with us today. Welcome to the Florida House. The next bill we're going to hear is PCS for House Bill 891, Healthcare Provider Accountability, by Representatives Giolombardo and Representative Salzman. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for letting me present this bill. This PCS is just does two things. It requires skilled nursing facilities to report to ACA any common ownership of 5% or more between nursing facilities or its parent companies. It also requires annual reporting to the governor, Senate President, Speaker regarding success of the program and how many PCAs, personal care attendants, take and pass a CNA exam. And there's an amendment that removes the entire financial section of the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? No members' questions? Seeing none, there are no amendments. This is a PCS.
Yes, PCS.
We're going to look at public testimony now. We have Karen Murillo, who is waving in support of the bill. Thank you. Thank you. We have Tom Parker from Florida Healthcare Association waving in support. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Seeing no other public testimony, we're under debate. Members, any debate? Seeing none, Representative Giolombardo, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Having waived close on his bill, Enola, please call the roll for PCS for House Bill 891 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez. Andrade.
Yes.
Borrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams.
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello. Yes. Vice Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Chair Tuck. 11 yeas, 0 nays. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Show the bill favorably reported. Congratulations. Next up, we're going to hear PCS for House Bill 1343, Healthcare Patient Protection, by Representative Altman. You're recognized to present your bill, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In Florida, current law has no specific standards for care for treating children in hospital emergency departments. Children hospitals are designed, staffed, and supplied to take care of critically ill and injured children. However, more than 82% of children who need emergency care are treated in general hospital emergency departments, which primarily treat adults and may not be prepared to treat children because of low pediatric volumes. This lack of preparedness results in the loss of precious young lives. Research shows that over 1,400 lives could have been saved between 2012 and 2017 if those children had received care in emergency departments with high levels of pediatric readiness. This PCS for House Bill 1343 addresses this lack of pediatric readiness for our emergency departments. It requires all hospitals with emergency departments to have evidence-based policies and procedures for pediatric emergency care related to triage, measuring and recording vital signs, weighing and recording weights in kilograms, calculating medical dosages, and using pediatric instruments. It requires emergency departments to conduct training on the policies and procedures, including, at a minimum, training on the use of pediatric instruments and clinical simulations and drills that simulate emergency situations for children. It requires all emergency departments to conduct the National Pediatric Readiness Assessment. And this bill is sort of an outgrowth. This National Pediatric Readiness Assessment found that a large percentage of our emergency departments are really not equipped to handle these children type of services. I've already received anecdotal information from parents who've experienced some of these problems, and there's a lot of examples in the media about some horrendous outcomes to young people who went to adult emergency departments and did not receive adequate care. It's tragic. This will help prevent that from happening. So by the National Pediatric Readiness Assessment created by the National Pediatric Readiness Project, it requires ACA, this bill requires ACA to publish the hospital scores online after going through this pediatric readiness program. Finally, the PCS also requires ACA to adopt rules for minimum standards for pediatric care in hospital emergency departments, including at a minimum, availability and immediate access to pediatric-specific equipment and supplies, and adding pediatric components to the hospital's comprehensive emergency management plan. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Seeing none, there are no amendments. We do not have public testimony, so we're under debate. Any debate? Seeing none, Representative Altman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I waive close.
Thank you. Representative Altman, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll for PCS for House Bill 1343 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams.
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello.
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Chair Tuck. 11 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Show the bill favorably reported. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Next up, we're going to have House Bill 309, Rural Emergency Hospitals, by Representative Schoaf. You're recognized, Representative Schoaf, to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 309, the Rural Emergency Hospital bill is a new the Rural Emergency Hospital designation is a new Medicare provider type made available as of January 1st, 2023. The REH model was created to respond to rural hospital closures and to give rural communities across access to health care The goal is to ensure that these hospitals in these underserved rural areas remain open and have access to health care. Since the REH will be a new hospital designation for the rural hospitals in Florida to become designated, we must amend our statute to define REH as a new coverage rural or critical access to qualify. It exempts rural emergency hospitals from requirements to provide inpatient services. It eliminates the insurance mandate, which was unnecessary for this designation, and it gives authority to ACA to implement the application process. That is the amendment.
Thank you. We have public testimony on the amendment. We have, apologize for not pronouncing this right, but it looks like it's Hai Nguyen, MD, from North Walton Doctors Hospital. He wishes to appear in person. He's waving in support on the amendment. Thank you so much for being here. And we have Dave Bennett from Baptist Health, also waving in support. Thank you for being here. That is all the public testimony that we have. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Ranking Member Casello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one. Rep. Shroff, I like the bill. I'm going to be up on it. Just can you define rural? What makes a hospital rural?
You're recognized.
I don't have the definition in front of me, but rural is defined in Florida statutes. I'll be happy to get the exact definition over to you.
Thank you, sir.
Any further questions? Questions on the amendment? Debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on your amendment. So the amendment has been, we're back on the bill now as, show the amendment adopted without objection. So now we're back on the bill as amended. There is public testimony on the bill as amended. David Micah from the Florida Hospital Association is a proponent and wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Real briefly, David Micah, the Florida Hospital Association. We represent 200 hospitals and health systems across the state of Florida, including the 24 rural hospitals in this state that serve around 2 million people. What I want to, the representative indicated it, but what I want to kind of stress again is rural hospitals are in the backbone of this service district in our state. If those rural hospitals go away, the patients don't. They just have to drive further. This option that the bill would present actually is phenomenal in the fact that it will allow them to maintain their outpatient care. And as you know, when the hospital goes away, especially in these communities, the primary care goes away, the doctors go away, the different services that can provide care to these patients goes away. So we thank the representative for the good bill and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you for being here. We have Rosa Randolph wishes to appear in support of the bill. Rosa? Okay, we have Dr. Nguyen, who is waving in support. Thank you. We have Sarah Massey from the Florida Chamber of Commerce waving in support. Thank you, Sarah. David Micah waving in support. And Dave Bennett from Baptist Health waving in support. That's all the public testimony we have. We're under debate. Members, under debate. Ex officio Woodson, please. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Lopez. Rep. Shroff, thank you for such a great bill. We know how hard it is for the people who live in the rural areas, especially those who are underprivileged, our farmers, and everybody else who live in those areas. What your bill is doing, you're providing access to a group, to a population that truly needs it. You're also making sure that those hospitals remain open whenever the care is needed, so they can go and get the care that they need. So I really appreciate this bill, and I look forward to support you on it. We have to ensure that everyone in the state of Florida have good access to health care, and that's what you're doing. So thank you so much.
Any other further debate? Seeing none, Representative Shroff, you're recognized to close. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Sorry, Chair. I'm being forced, but so I'm barely up on this bill, and there was barely any opposition. So, I'm good.
You're recognized, Representative Rizzo.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Shroff, thanks for being a champion for rural communities everywhere. And I just want to reiterate. I mean, I've barely seen any opposition to this bill. It's a great bill. Thank you.
Is there any further debate?
Please, no.
Seeing none, Representative Schoaf, you are now recognized to close on your bill.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's bills like this are great. It's not going to have a fiscal impact on the state. It's going to bring in more federal dollars for our rural hospitals that really need it. And I just appreciate all of your support.
Representative Schoaf, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 309 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez. Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman. Yes. Gonzalez-Pittman.
You can barely speak.
Yes, okay. Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams.
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello.
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Chair Tuck. 11 yeas, 0 nays. Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations, Representative Schoaf. Next up, we have House Bill 783, Medical Managed Care Plan Performance by Representative Burfield. You're recognized to present your bill, Representative Burfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have an amendment. Do you want me to start with that? Because that addresses some substantive changes.
Why don't you just give us a brief overview of the bill, and then we'll take up the amendment.
So Florida's Medicaid journey began over 20 years ago. Over 10 years ago, Florida extended the program statewide. At the time, Florida was seen as a national leader around Medicaid managed care programs. And many of the other states have since gone to Medicare, implementing a number of the principles of our program. However, those states had the advantage of learning from us, which has enabled them to improve on some of the aspects, specifically around data collection, analyst reporting, and accountability. They've used this data to better understand the care being delivered and the cost drivers, which has enabled policymakers to make continued policy and financial improvements to their programs. Currently, Florida's reporting shows plan performance on HEDIS data, which is a set of outcome measures developed by the National Committee on Quality Assurance. Florida meets additional reporting requirements by CMS. However, the state has not reviewed and updated its data to the best practices as other states have. Much of what is being required in this piece of legislation, as far as reporting is concerned, is information that is already being collected by AHCA, but is not in a format that is easily digestible or just legible by lawmakers like us. By requiring a third-party vendor to analyze and generate a public-facing dashboard and an annual report will assist us in making decisions related to the program. Having data providing transparency into the Medicaid program that will allow us as policymakers to see pain points within the program and enact policies to address them. For example, there are several aspects in Live Healthy where we're making strides to improve access to care or reduce costs through promoting appropriate care settings. If we don't have the data, how can we ensure that we are actually achieving our goal? I believe AHCA has even recognized the need to analyze these metrics more effectively, as evidenced in their recent release of the ITN for the Developmentally Disabled Medicaid Managed Care Pilot Program, which we passed just last year. In short, the new standard of analysis we established through this piece of legislation will produce the data necessary to perform our policy and financial fiduciary responsibility, which we each committed to when we took our oath. Madam Chair, that's a brief overview of the legislation.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? All right, then, Representative Burfield, you are recognized to explain amendment barcode 242539.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Simply stated, the difference between the original version and the second version are three things. The first two deal with concerns that the plans had. One, in clarity that they would not have to produce an additional report, that the data that was already being provided at AHCA would be leveraged. The second one was that as we look at the data, that it accurately reflects the number of people each plan serves. So a smaller plan may not look better than it actually is in comparison to a larger plan based on the number they are serving. So we actually delineate the fact that it will be reflected per 1,000. An additional change in the amendment was one tied to how ACA currently is doing their reporting. So we changed it from monthly to quarterly. And those are the significant changes.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, we have one public testimony from David Micah, the Florida Hospital Association. He is waving in support. Thank you. No further public testimony. Is there any debate on the amendment? On the amendment? Seeing none, let's show the amendment adopted without objection. Now we're back on the bill as amended. And I have some public testimony as amended. David Micah, the Florida Hospital Association, waves in. He wants to appear in person. Yes, you may. You're recognized.
Thank you again, Madam Chair, and thanks to the committee. We want to thank Representative Burfield for working with us on this bill as we start to talk about transparency and the ways that we can look at that almost $20 billion budget for Medicaid managed care that the state uses and give more tool sets. And we think there's a lot of plans doing phenomenal things in the state and operating very closely, and we think that gives an opportunity to see that for the state and for the legislatures to keep making those decisions, as the representative indicated. Again, thank you to the representative for the hard work and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you for being here. Karen Murillo from the AARP, she waves in support. Thank you, Karen, for being here. There's no further testimony on the bill as amended. We're moving into debate. Any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for meeting with me yesterday. I appreciate you doing that. I'm up on your bill. The only thing I would recommend is that we make sure that the private organization that we contract with is under the purview of somebody other than the organization managing the data, just so that we make sure that we're getting all the data we're supposed to be getting, and that it's accurate and it's not scrubbed by the organization that's managing.
Thank you. Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Burfield, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I think this is an important indicator to our constituents to say, we understand and respect that you are entrusting us with your tax dollars. And as was mentioned, this is a $20 billion line item in our budget. And it's something that if you thought about it from your personal budget, could you imagine not taking the time to review it and have that form of oversight? So I encourage you to join me today in making sure we have the transparency we should. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Burfield, having closed on her bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 783 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez? Andrade?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Chamberlain?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez-J?
Yes.
Rayner? Rizzo?
Yes.
Silvers? Steele?
Yes.
Tremont? Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson?
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez?
Yes.
Chair Tuck? 11 yays, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations.
Thank you, ma'am.
Next, we're going to hear House Bill 639, Coverage of Out-of-Network Ground Ambulance Emergency Services by Representative Yeager. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ranking Member Costello and esteemed members. Thanks for the opportunity. When you call 911, it's an emergency. And with that, you don't have time to verify if that coverage is in your network or that ambulance is out of your network. With that said, this bill, HB 639, requires insurers to reimburse out-of-network ambulance service providers at set rates. Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the bill? Members, any questions? Seeing none, we will move to, I'd like you to explain amendment. You have an amendment on this bill, amendment barcode 958315. You're recognized.
Yes, Madam Chair. So thank you very much. This amendment on those set rates, there's three categories. Instead of greater of the three, this has changed it to lesser of the three.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, we have no public testimony on the amendment. We're under debate on the amendment. Anyone wishes to debate? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. We are now back on the bill as amended. And I have some public testimony. I have Terrence Romatar from the Florida Ambulance Association, who is a proponent of the bill and wishes to appear in person. You're going to wave in support. Thank you so much. Audrey Brown, Florida Association of Health Plans. She is an opponent of the bill. You're recognized. Is your mic on? I'm sorry. Excuse me. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing this bill today, and thank you for sponsoring the bill, Representative Yeager. 2016, this legislature, the Florida legislature, protected consumers from surprise and balance billing, and almost every service category would in terms of emergency, but air ambulance and ground ambulance were not included at that time. And that was taken care of. The air ambulance portion was also added in 2020 by this legislature to protect consumers from surprise or balance billing. The bill that we have before you today attempts to close the remaining gap, which is ground ambulance, and we, again, appreciate doing that for consumers. Obviously, this is a consumer protection bill. The only suggestion and ask would be for us to maybe work with the sponsor to actually just add this to existing current law that was passed in 2016, because there is still a missing piece to the payment parameters of usual and customary provider charges that are paid for that geographic region, and that is something that we would just like to work with the sponsor on. So thank you.
Ms. Brown, your card says you are an opponent. Are you a proponent or an opponent of this bill? Are you in favor or opposed?
We would like to work with the sponsor, ma'am, on that one piece, but the spirit of the bill is absolutely something we support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no further public testimony, we are back on the on debate. Any members wish to debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Yeager, you are recognized to close on your bill. Representative Yeager, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 639 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams.
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello.
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez?
Yes.
Chair Tuck? 11 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations, Representative Yeager. Thank you. Our next bill is House Bill 935, Home Health Care Services, by Representative Franklin. Representative, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Also to the ranking member, Rep. Costello, and members. HB 935 seeks to address issues facing the home health care industry by improving access to care and ensuring that home health services can be fully utilized here in the state of Florida, which has the potential for tremendous cost savings in our health care system, as home health care services are always going to be the most cost-effective setting for patients to receive quality care. Madam Chair, we do have an amendment.
Members, are there any questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? We have no public testimony on the bill. You're recognized to introduce your amendment, barcode 062497.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. This amendment strikes Section 1 and Section 2, but leaves Section 3 intact. What that does is better align us with the 2020 CARES Act, which allowed advanced practicing registered nurses and physician assistants to order home health care services for Medicare and commercial plans. But currently here in the state of Florida, they cannot order home health services for the Medicaid population. So Section 3 allows the APRNs to order home health care services for the Medicaid patients, and that is the amendment.
Any questions on the amendment? Questions? Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're recognized.
Forget my voice. What kind of services will they be ordering?
Home health. You're recognized. Health. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Home health services, so that could be physical therapy, rehabilitation, maybe administering medication, so everything within that space.
Any further questions? We don't have any public testimony on the amendment. We're under debate on the amendment. Any debate? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. We're now back on the bill as amended, and we have public testimony. Bobby Lolly from the Home Care Association is a proponent of the bill. He's waving in support. Thank you so much for being here. We also have Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Thank you. And we have Jennifer Ungrew from the Home Care Association of America, waving in support. Thank you for being here. That concludes public testimony. We're under debate. Any members wish to debate? Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Lopez. Representative Franklin, we had a conversation on the bill yesterday, and I know Representative Franklin Gallup. We had a conversation on the bill yesterday, and I really like what you are trying to do with this bill. If the physician, the PAs, the physician assistant, and the advanced nurse practitioners, they provide some of the same services that the doctors provide. And our Medicaid patients are already going through a lot of changes, a lot of hoops in order to access services. What you're trying to do, trying to bridge the gaps to ensure that those Medicaid patients are served just like any other patient. And I know as a pharmacist, you are very passionate about what's going on in the healthcare system. So I appreciate the fact that you took the time to work on this bill and ensuring that everyone is served. So I look forward to supporting you on this bill, and I hope all my colleagues would support you as well. Thank you so much.
Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Franklin, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I just want to thank the chair as well as staff for being very helpful and stakeholders to craft this together to get in a good posture for today. Looking forward to working with you continuously to put it in the best posture possible. In order to serve, of course, our Medicaid population. Once again, thanks so much for your support on this bill. And with that, Madam Chair, I close.
Representative Franklin, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 935 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo?
Yes.
Silvers? Steele?
Yes.
Tremont? Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Woodson?
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez?
Yes.
Chair Tuck? 11 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations. Now we'll move to members of our committee. Representative, we're going to hear House Bill 1259, Provider of Cardiovascular Services, by Representative Andrade. You're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Members, House Bill 1259 eliminates the certain licensure requirements for adult diagnostic cardiovascular service programs, specifically related to level one ACS programs. It removes some of the volume requirements that are explicitly spelled out in statute, in favor of simply complying with best practices of either the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, or the Society of Cardiac Angioplasty and Intervention.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? There is one amendment. Representative Andrade, you are recognized to present barcode 666259.
Thank you very much, Chair. The amendment removes those licensure deletions from the original bill. But retains the ability for level one ACS programs to use rotational or other atherectomy devices or treat chronic total occlusions.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, we have one public testimony. Dane Bennett from Baptist Health waves in support. Thank you. Thank you. That's it. That concludes public testimony on the amendment. Is there any debate? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. We're back on the bill now as amended. I have two public testimonies. I have Dane Bennett, again waving in support from Baptist Health. Thank you. And I have Patrick Bridges from Advent Health waving in support. Thank you so much for being here. We're back on the bill. Is there any debate? Debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Andrade, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close, Chair.
Representative Andrade, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 1259 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams. Ex officio Woodson.
Yes.
Ranking Member Costello.
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Chair Tuck. 11 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations. We're now on bill, House Bill 1387, Adult Daycare Centers, by Representatives Silvers and Rizzo. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And hello to our ranking member over there. How you doing, sir? And obviously members. Adult daycare centers provide an ever-increasing labor-intensive service for elderly, including Alzheimer's and dementia care. There has been no meaningful increase in Medicare reimbursement rates since 2011 for these service providers. Approximately 4,400 Floridians, who are seniors, avail themselves of these services, and the number is growing daily. This bill would allow for better education of staff to better meet the needs for those affected by Alzheimer's disease and related disorders, and increases passing scores for certification. Compliance with educational requirements will also affect ongoing licensure. And, Madam Chair, there is an amendment which greatly impacts the bill.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions on the bill? On the bill. Seeing none, Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to explain the amendment, barcode 199291.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment removes the provision that sets Medicaid managed care payment rates for adult daycare centers and transportation service rates for adult daycare centers. It also authorizes adult daycare centers to provide transportation and requires managed care plans to pay rates negotiated directly with those adult daycare centers. And also, with a nod to Chair Schoaf, with this amendment, this bill will no longer have the state bearing any fiscal impact on the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? There's no public testimony on the amendment. We're on debate on the amendment. Any debate? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted without objection. We are now back on the bill as amended, and we have some public testimony. Kateria DeLis from FADSA is waving in support. Thank you. We have Rosa Randolph also waving in support. I have Rafael Laura Alfonso waving in support. Yoniel Gonzalez, FADSSA, wishing to appear in person. Thank you so much. Alexi De Leon, Elder Care Services of Florida, waving in support. Thank you. And Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Thank you very much. We are now under debate, members. Any debate? Representative Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Rizzo, while I appreciate the intent, if you keep up with the bear puns, I might have to start clawing back my support of your bill.
Is there any further debate? Ranking Member Costello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, I commend you, Representative Rizzo, and Representative Silvers for providing this bill. As we know that this terrible disease affects the family members just as much as it does the victim. And to be able to, you know, help those families get through what they're going through, I think this is a great bill in doing that. And I commend both you and Representative Silvers for doing that.
Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Rizzo, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Well, thank you, and I'll keep the bear puns to a minimum. I don't want Representative Andrade to poo on my close. Ranking Member, you're absolutely right. This industry provides just an unbelievable service. And it's more than just dropping off a senior, picking them up in the afternoon, or having them picked up by the service center in the morning and dropped off in the afternoon. More and more we see more, like we said, Alzheimer's-related disorders being treated. And it's a great service, not just for those clients, but for family members too. And so this bill would help to kind of stabilize this industry, but also provide keep providing and a much better standard of care for people that are taking advantage of this in-home service. And with that, I ask for a favorable support.
Representative Rizzo, having closed on his bill, Enola, please call the roll on House Bill 1387 and announce the vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams. Ex officio Woodson. Ranking Member Costello?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez?
Yes.
Chair Tuck? 11 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Congratulations, Representative Rizzo. We'll go to our last bill from our ex officio member, PCS, for House Bill 773, Coverage for Diagnostic and Supplemental Breast Examinations by Representative Woodson. Representative Woodson, you're recognized to present your bill. You're recognized.
Madam Chair Lopez, Ranking Member Joe Casello, members of the committee, thank you. And I would like to say thank you to Chair Tuck, who is not here, also for allowing me to present the bill, to put it on the calendar to be heard in this committee. Members, I'm sure every single one of you knows or knew someone who was diagnosed with breast cancer. My mother, who is watching me from heaven, she had a mastectomy. I myself had a scare 5 years ago when I went for my mammogram, and I got a call to come back for additional tests. That was the scariest experience that I had. Unfortunately, I had 2 insurance premiums, and also I was lucky enough to be able to go and have those additional tests that reveal that I had the tissue that was about to be cancerous, which is what they call stage zero. So I was one of those fortunate women who did not have to go to a mastectomy or did not have to die for breast cancer. So the intent of my bill, House Bill, PCS for House Bill 773, is to ensure the earlier detection of breast cancer by eliminating the out-of-pocket costs for medically necessary diagnostic and supplemental breast imaging. A recent study published in Radiology found that 1 in 5 patients said they cannot go back for the follow-up imaging if they had to pay a deductible. We know that once cancer spreads outside of the breast, it is up to 5 times more expensive to treat. This legislation that I'm introducing has passed in 20 states, and fiscal notes have shown negligible impacts on premiums. No one should have to decline a test that helps to rule out breast cancer or confirm the need for a biopsy because of the cost. Yet, thousands of people in Florida are doing it every year. This legislation does not seek to create a new coverage mandate. It simply addresses the patient cost-sharing requirements as currently defined in Florida statutes. The bill pertains only to those who are currently covered by state-regulated health plans that are already providing coverage for breast imaging. I want you to hear those statistics clearly. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. And 1 in every 100 breast cancer diagnosed in the USA is found in men. So it's not just women. Men also suffer from breast cancer. So members, I'm just asking you to understand what's going on, how we can save lives. Because by the time women or men realize that they cannot have those tests, those additional tests that are required, because they don't have the cost-sharing money to give the hospital or the place that they go for those additional tests, it's too late. This is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're recognized.
Would the additional diagnostic that would be covered, would that be for biopsies as well as 3D breast exams?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those additional tests, after you get the initial mammogram, you might be sent for an ultrasound, an MRI, or biopsy. And the out-of-pocket cost that is needed for those tests, even though the initial test is covered by the state group insurance, but the out-of-pocket cost is what the man or the woman cannot come up with. And that's when it might lead to death. Because by the time you diagnose with it, if you don't get those additional tests to know what the issue is, you end up going to a stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, then it's too late.
Any further question? Follow-up. Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you're recognized.
Is the 3D breast mammogram covered? Are we covering in this bill the 3D?
Yes, sir.
3D?
May I, Madam Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes. And my bill.
Any further questions? I have 3 public testimony. Karen Murillo, AARP, waving in support. Thank you, Karen. Brian Joggerst from the Florida Breast Cancer Foundation, waving in support. And Susan Harbin from American Cancer Society, Cancer Action Network, waving in support. Thank you, Susan, for being here. We have no further questions. We're now under debate. Ranking Member Casello,
you're
recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just like to say, Representative Woodson, I appreciate your well-versed and educated and your bills and the passion you put into when you get up that podium to present your bills. I can't see how anybody could vote no on any of your bills when you bring them forward. So I appreciate that we appreciate that. I think as a committee we do, and I would urge all my colleagues to vote up on this one.
Thank you. Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Rep. Woodson, thank you very much for bringing this great bill. I have had several conversations with a couple of us that serve on this committee, and all of us have had some type of encounter with this ugly disease. So this will actually help a lot of people and help save lives. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Woodson, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to close by thanking some people who have really helped me to get this bill to where it is today. I spent almost 2 years working on this bill, and I have to give credit to Krista Kalamas. She spent a lot of time with me. When I left Tallahassee last year, 2 weeks after I left, I called Krista and I said, Krista, I need your help. And she started working with me. So Krista, thank you so much for the time that you have given me in order to get this bill to where it is today. And you know how important this bill is for me. And you have never said no. Every time I call, you always answer my call and you did the research with me and everything else. So I really sincerely appreciate you and your team as well, and Chris McElroy as well. I would like to also thank Chair Talk for calendaring the bill for me. I've been bothering her. I need this bill to be heard. I need this bill to be heard. So she gave me the chance for the bill to be heard. I would like to thank also Leah Baker from the Susan G. Coleman. She has done a lot of work with us as well, She has provided us with a lot of information. So I'm grateful and thankful. And I thank you all, the members as well, for hearing me this morning. There's so many people to thank. I don't want to leave anybody out. Chair Lopez, thank you. I really appreciate you. To all the members here, I hope not you. No. I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I'm messing with he's always bothering me. No, but this is a serious bill. Over 3,200 Floridians died of breast cancer in 2022. So when you take the impact over a five-year period, it's equal to 15,000-plus people who would be dying of this disease. So members, this is a very important bill. You have family members, you have friends, you have wives, girlfriends, or whatever you have. So please, please, I'm asking for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Woodson, having closed on her bill, Enola, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 773 and announce a vote.
Representatives Alvarez, Andrade.
Yes.
Barrero.
Yes.
Chamberlain.
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Lopez J.
Yes.
Rayner. Rizzo.
Yes.
Silvers. Steele.
Yes.
Tremont. Williams. Yes. Ex officio Woodson.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ranking Member Costello?
Yes.
Vice Chair Lopez?
Yes.
Chair Tuck? 11 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Rep. Woodson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. Thank you, Krista.
Committee, this concludes our committee agenda. Representative Chamberlain moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.